Penultimate wise men say of the season for us. So two of our favourite guests in this week, lads who have the privilege of covering Sunderland only, i.e. not Newcastle, Chris Young from the Sunderland Echo, who turned up hours ago.
Yeah, early riser.
James Hunter from the Evening Chronicle is here too, so we've got two heavyweights here tonight.
In the nick of time, mate.
Not literally, mind.
Yeah, for the big games of the season.
It would be nice if we were safe in having this discussion though, wouldn't it?
But not nearly as much fun.
No, okay, I'll hold you that.
Sado masochist, one of them ones you hear about on the internet.
That's what happens when you cover
someone. Don't sell newspapers if you're safe, do you? So.
No, exactly. Well, there's always that. Or you don't get website clicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is the modern day selling newspapers, of course. Right.
See, that's a dig.
We've gone off. No.
Get
no.
them in. Truth. Have a go.
That's the truth. It's modern media, isn't it? Yeah,
it is.
Nobody was having a dig. That if you
no. 24/7
if you decide to interpret that way, then
I just
that's
think, you know,
you.
If you're going to talk about that, then it just sounds as though you're saying the quality's low, but the clicks are high. That's what you need. You'll never believe.
That's your cynical mindset. Yeah, I didn't say anything of the sort.
You'll never believe what happened at the match on Saturday. And then an ellipsis.
Unfortunately, where Sunderland are concerned, you could probably yes.
Well, you know, getting on with the match, not a lot did happen at the match on Saturday. Only so much you can say. 0-0 draw.
Seen it all before this season, haven't we, really? Typical scrappy game, not many chances. Sunderland lacking the pace and guile really to really get the breakthrough. I think it was only really that Danny Graham chance that was a clear-cut one. I mean, obviously Larson had that free kick in the first half, but a lot of huff and puff, not a lot of quality.
But at least we're getting the huff and puff now. I don't know if I'm just being overly optimistic about this, because there was a lot of negative response from fans after the game, James, yet I thought what we saw in the last couple of months before Advocaat came, and even in the Crystal Palace game, was these players look like they turned it in a little bit. And, you know, I'm taking some satisfaction as a fan that I feel like these players are giving it all now.
Well, it's classic Sunderland, isn't it? Just as in the last two seasons, you know, it's come to this end of the season and they've belatedly turned up, you know, and had they have turned up earlier in the season, we wouldn't be in this situation now, you know, of hanging on and waiting to see what happens. But, you know, they have come to the party late, but they're here and hopefully it'll be in time to survive.
Is it going to be like a theme every couple of years, Chris? Get rid of the manager for the last few games, the players start turning up and we'll stay up.
Well, that's the reason why they're in this situation every year, isn't it? I mean, 7 managers in 7 years now, it says it all really about why we're here. I think Advocaat certainly improved matters. You can't question that. They're a far better organised team, they're more resilient, and they're just playing basic football, aren't they? They're getting numbers into the box and hoping to create chances that way. So in that way, it is better, but there's still that obvious lack of quality, guile, pace in the team. And if they do stop up, that's something they've got to address in the summer.
It's driving us crackers, this Gareth, isn't it? Because we've been having this, since we started the podcast, we've been saying not enough pace in the side for a start. Don't move the ball quickly enough. And something's got to change eventually. Somebody's got to come in eventually and sort of pinpoint the right kind of players.
Well, we got some fullbacks this season, so that was a step in the right direction. It only took about 6 years, so maybe. I mean, and one of those is fast. Well, Billy Jones is relatively quick as well. He's not like Van Aanholt, but we need...
And a proven Premier League goal scorer as well, even though he's only scored 4 so far. But
But...
Not Billy Jones.
Not Billy Jones, no. Still don't want to go back over old ground, but I'd rather have had a player with a bit of pace up front than Defoe, I think, in January still, because I think that cost Poyet his job in the end, with the fact he had to try and accommodate him and he couldn't. And now, Defoe's done reasonably well at times in front of goal, and he's got us some points, so it's worked out. But, I mean, talking about the game on Saturday, it was just... I mean, the first 20 minutes were all right. I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy the game. It, like Stephen was saying, the battling qualities and stuff make it entertaining to an extent. But generally, I mean, it was one of the lowest quality games of football, I think, from both sides that I've seen all season. I can't remember a worse performance. I know that it was a bit windy in that, but I mean, they couldn't string 2 passes together, a pair of them, and then it was just like, oh, let's lump the ball into the corner, get a striker to chase onto it, try and hold it. Wickham, who's been a very important player under Advocaat, was pretty poor, and you know, he couldn't trap a bag of sand at the weekend, so every time he managed to get it under control, he seemed to give it away with his next touch. It was just a really like technically bad game of football.
Luckily for Wickham, though, I mean, he, like Gareth's just touching on it there, he's been one of the players who's been massively improved under Advocaat, so give him a little bit of leeway on that front, you would say.
Yeah, I mean, I know Gareth's obviously got a big downer on that game at the weekend.
I mean, I was going to say, what's the good news?
Yeah, it wasn't great by any means, but I've seen plenty of worse games than that this season, I think. You know, to me, it was exactly what you'd expect from edgy relegation battle at the end of the season, particularly when Leicester were almost certainly aware of how Hull were getting on, and so they knew that a point was enough for them. You know, Sunderland had the better chances and looked the more likely team to win, but they were the team that needed to win.
Interesting, Chris. Seb Quatez, I know you gave him your man of the match in your report, as a lot of people did. Now, one thing I said I was worried about when Poyet left was Virginie. I thought, you know, he was out of his comfort zone a little bit. Perhaps once Poyet left it, Quatez didn't even really come into consideration, you think, you know, because he's from Uruguay, like Poyet, you make that connection, don't you? Yet he's excelled. He's went the other way, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think that Crystal Palace game proved to be a defining moment for Advocaat and Virginia. That I don't think Advocaat liked what he saw from Virginia that day. And Quatez was the only available alternative, really, when Brown was still on the sidelines. But he's come in. And I think by each game has gone along, I think he's got better and better. I thought he was very good at Everton. And again on Saturday, he's not spectacular, but he does the simple things that you want your centre-half to do. He heads it, he kicks it, he intercepts. And at this stage of the season, Sunderland needed someone like that, particularly with the injuries to Brown and Virginie not convincing.
It's almost, James, like he's given a licence to defend. I know I've said this before, isn't it? But you almost feel like Poyet demanded his defenders to be ball players. And I thought that's why Virginie might struggle in a side that are going to take the physical route, direct route, and it's proved to be true. But quite as perhaps surprise on that front as well, as we said, because he was Poyet's man.
Yeah.
But he suits this better, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, don't forget he's come here from Liverpool. You know, he's not going to be a total mug, is he? He's come from Liverpool. He's got more. I haven't totted up the figures, but I dare say he's got probably more Premier League experience than Virginie has. I think you're right to say that Gus Poyet wanted ball-playing centre-backs, and that's lovely, but in the situation that Sunderland are in, they just needed centre-backs that keep the ball away from the goal.
Certainly this stage of the season.
Let's worry about playing nice football from the back some other time, because it's about getting your priorities right at the moment.
Is your heart breaking over Virginie, Gareth?
Not particularly, no. it's really the point, I think. He's the kind of player that a team like Sunderland will have in the squad, because that's the level we're at the moment. He's okay. He goes through good spells of form, goes through bad spells of form, and that's it, really. If he was any better, he'd be somewhere else. I don't think he's as bad as, you know, again, always going about hyperbole, somebody always has to be, nobody's ever okay, everyone's the worst player in the world or the best player in the world. I think Virginie's just okay. And I know people might say, oh, well, he's got to be moved on in the summer, but there's a player that we've spent 18 months working with, giving him Premier League experience, and I think for the price he'll probably cost, I think it would be a free transfer.
Is that not done, Chris Virginie, anyway, if we stay up?
All but done, I think, yeah.
Well, the thing is,
I don't even think
to me, it would be a no-brainer to keep him, because you can't just, every time, you've got to have some sort of option in your squad, and he'll be one of them, because Brown's getting towards the end, he may well be finished, or he might not sign a new deal, or Shea's getting a bit older, Quatez will go back, so you'd have to spend all the money on centre-halves.
Any chance of Quatez staying around now?
Well, I mean, you never know. I mean, he's only got a year left on his contract at Liverpool. I wouldn't imagine for the world that it'll cost a millions and millions from Liverpool. They're quite keen to get rid of him. I think Gareth's right. I think when Virginie, when you're going to have to bring in two centre-halves as well to probably replace Brown and Quatez, you don't want to be bringing in three centre-halves, do you?
I agree, yeah.
So, I mean, even if Virginie and probably to a lesser extent O'Shea are bit part players next season.
That's got to be the aim, isn't it? It's okay retaining these players, but you have to aim higher for when you're looking at the first team.
I think if you bring in two centre-halves who are going to be your regulars, and you've got O'Shea and Virginie as well, is, I don't think that's the worst array of options in the world.
I mean, Bram still might sign a new
deal. Yeah, he might do.
I don't think, if the wages were right, that would be such a bad idea, because it's good to have those types of players around the training ground, at least experienced players who've played in national football, won the league, Champions League. I think it would be silly just to get rid of him. And he, aside from, well, he's been relatively injury-free for Wes Brown in the last 18 months, so recently it's caught up with him, but... I think
the thing with Wes Brown and a player of his age is that if you're going to carry on playing and you're 35 years old, and he'll be 36 in October, if you're going to carry on, you need to be playing week in, week out. There's no point in being hanging around for the sake of 10 games a season. I don't think that would really be a
decent
option.
And if these older guys doing the coaching badges, does anybody know?
O'Shea certainly is. I'm not sure about Wes.
I'm just thinking sometimes, you know, it could be a pathway into that for them, couldn't it? Not that I know. I just think Wes Brown's birthday, James, so I thought you might have known. I don't know. I was impressed with that.
You're impressed with that. I don't know whether he's doing his coaching badges.
Do you know all the players' birthdays?
No, I don't buy many cards. I don't buy many cards.
I won't do a spontaneous quiz or anything like that and put you on the spot. But the whole back four, I think, epitomised the side of the moment where, first time in a while, we've had a settled side, isn't it? And, you know, the top sides can get away with having a squad and rotating, but it doesn't seem that the sides near the bottom can. You would much prefer have the same sort of 11 out on the pitch most weeks. Everybody knows the job.
Not had an unchanged team in the Premier League all season. Says it all, doesn't it, really, why they're there? There hasn't been a settled team. There's been far too many.
It's looking a bit more structured now than previously, though.
Yeah, I think Advocates certainly tried to get a settled team together and a settled pattern of play together. Whereas certainly under the last two or three months of Poyet, when after the Defoe signing, it seemed to be sort of a lottery of a lineup every single week.
Certainly did. Midfielders, Liam Pridcut came in. Less
than I thought Pete were a little.
He
bit
did. Go on then, go. You okay. You start the defence then, go.
I'm not defending him again. I just think it's, why does somebody have to be the person that everyone decides that they're going to hate and boo him? And things like that. I just don't see the point. He wasn't great, but I would hardly say that Larson and Cattermole.
I didn't say I hated him.
No, I'm just saying it. I didn't think in the first half that Larson and Cattermole imposed themselves on the game any more than Bridcut did. They did bits and pieces, and you know, Bridcut gave the ball away a few times. He actually played a couple of decent passes inside the fullback, one in the first half, one in the second half, to try and get people in. He nearly got to four, I think, in the first half, and I just think. Overall contribution to the game, I didn't think it was horrific. He wasn't really very influential. He was just average. But
I think you've just got to be realistic, because Liam Bridcut isn't supposed to play on the right side of a narrow midfield three.
No.
He should have, you know, his position is where Lee Cattermole was, but he's not as good as Lee Cattermole, so you put Lee Cattermole there. And then you try and squeeze him in on the right side of a narrow midfield three, and it didn't suit him, and you could see that on Saturday. Yeah. But that's not his fault.
Even the league Cattermole position's changed now as well since Poyet's left, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It was almost like a specialist player for a specialist position, wasn't it?
He's pushed him 5-10 yards further forward, hasn't he? It's less of a holding role. I think Advocate had identified that when they were playing against three-man central midfielders, that Sunderland were often outnumbered in there because Cattermole or Bridcut was sitting far too deep, that it left Sunderland with a two. I tend to agree with James. I think it's got to be Cattermole or Bridcut. I'm not convinced that they can play in the same team.
So not an array of options at the moment, though, with Gomez going out?
Well, I mean, I suppose in theory you could play Adam Johnson in central midfield, but do you take such a bold step for trips to Arsenal and Chelsea? I think if you're going to use Johnston in central midfield, you'd probably do it against Leicester on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. You might be tempted to put Bridcut and Cattermole in and play them deep, and Larson at the top rather than having the...
It probably suits it more for a trip to Arsenal and Chelsea than it did against Leicester.
If you just need to defend, then which they're going to, that they've got to try and create a few chances and take some chances when they come, but they'll be the primary goal in the next two games. I know he's trying to play it down a bit, but and Nick asked him about parking the bus on Saturday, and he said, yeah, we'll park the bus, and then sort of laughed it off and said, no, we'll be going to win the game, because if you don't, then you'll definitely get beat and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I'd hardly say we were expansive against Everton, even though 1-2-0.
We were great. Got performance of the week that day against Everton, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Sunderland go to Arsenal, Chelsea, and all these places and try to park the bus in the past, and I can't think off the top of my head of any occasion when it's worked.
We got a couple of nil-nil at Arsenal.
Three nil-nils against Arsenal.
Yeah, but I don't think they parked the bus on those occasions. No. You know, they wound up nil-nil, but I don't think they set out for a draw.
Is it unrealistic to hope to think, right, here's a plan for the Arsenal game. The first 60 minutes, we just defend deep. They can't really break us down. After an hour, they think, you know what? We only need a point here. Let's just coast through the game now.
Are you starting to think of sort of Shame of Seville scenario, sort of Austria, West Germany type?
You can live in hope, can't you? Not going to happen, of course.
I think I know we'll talk a bit more in depth about Arsenal in a bit. But it's interesting the way that the system is kind of like he's employed. It's a bit of a nothingness, really, isn't there? There's no real, even with a 4-3-3, the setup's there, and it's clear that the defensive responsibilities that Wickham's got and Defoe's got, and you've got to give credit for the steal that he's brought in, and it's almost like it's just a stamp of nothingness. It's like it's identifiable in that it isn't anything. It's just difficult to explain. It's just getting through the game hoping.
It's back to basics football, isn't it? You keep your defensive shape, you get numbers forward, and hope that something comes off for you in the final third. That's all it is. There's no great strategy or way of playing. It's simple football.
I don't think there's an erratic or ambitious change coming from Dick in the last couple of games, do you?
No, but let's face it, you're not going to reinvent the wheel. You know, there's only so many ways that you can deploy 10 outfield players on a football pitch, and believe me, we've seen them all before. Mm. You know, what he has done, though, which you can't deny, is he's taken the same group of players as Gus Poyet. He's got more points per game out of them, and he's got them scoring a goal or two. He's getting more out of the same players with this system, whether it's particularly attractive or not. You might not want to start the season this way, but given the emergency that he walked into, assuming Sunderland stay up, it will have proved to have been the right decision.
I think Sunderland are fourth in the form table, or might be fourth or fifth.
They were certainly in the top six before the Leicester.
Yes, but before the Leicester game, wasn't Leicester, Chelsea and Arsenal the top three in the form table?
I think they are, Leicester, Chelsea, Arsenal, and then Sunderland. So.
Great, isn't it?
Well, I think they're capable of getting, like we've said under Advocate, the resolve that he's put in there, and like you say, the simplicity of it. There's no real responsibility other than to go out and
keep your shape,
and if the chance comes, take it. And
for that reason, Bridcut's going to play, isn't he? I still think it's going to be the same midfield three. Like you mentioned, Johnson coming in, and okay, he said he's not going to park the bus, but he certainly isn't going to go for the more attacking option.
No, he might put Johnson in.
Might he drop Defoe?
Well, that's a possibility. Yeah. He might drop a Defoe or a Graham just so you've got a bit more on the counter-attack by bringing in Johnson.
I guess the way he would look at it now is that we try something new, a new system, or does he think, well, this one's kind of working? As Gareth mentioned against Everton, it's not like we were opened up right, left and centre. A lot of the Everton, you know, they were restricted from shooting from distance, weren't they? Now, Arsenal are a better team than Everton, but that could be in the back of his mind thinking, you know, do I want to start messing about with things here? Because suddenly you change things around, you find yourself a goal down after 5 minutes, then everything's out the window. We've got a goal difference to think about as well.
Well, that's important as well. I mean, I think that if anything, he might be inclined to play Johnson as part of the front three. Maybe squeeze Defoe out. Maybe play Wickham, Johnson, and Graham as your front three, because I think he'll want to try and keep the midfield as tight as possible, which almost certainly means Bridcut. You're going to want tacklers in there. You're not going to want Arsenal waltzing through past you. And Johnson, while you bring something to you going forward, he's not so great when it comes to putting a shift in defensively, and there's going to be a lot of that on Wednesday night.
It's possibly a game Bridcut would like, actually, and welcome, because he's a player who likes defending, clearly. And he's going to be doing a lot of that, isn't he?
He'll just be doing the simple stuff, isn't it? Breaking up Arsenal attacks and trying to stop them playing triangles in and around the edge of the penalty area.
God, talk about Arsenal playing triangles in and around the penalty area. We know what this game's going to be like, don't we, from start to finish. Did we get done 4-0 last year?
4-1. Jack Arini scored.
What about Giacarini, though?
That was a week before the cup final.
He made the bench, didn't he? So
yeah, I don't think he's up to speed, shall we say?
No, that was it. It was nice to see him back, though. I know he's got his detractors because he hasn't really delivered what we'd hoped, and there's been a variety of different issues and reasons for that. Can't, like so many players we've seen to sign, he can't really fit him into a style of player system, and then they're injured, or when they do get the chance, they don't quite take it. But back end of last season, he was really important player, and he's good in a when a game gets stretched. You know, I know we're sort of joking about saying Arsenal might decide after, you know, half an hour, 20 minutes to go, oh well, a draw would be alright, but they're going to be going for the win, and that pressure will get deeper and deeper as the game goes on. That pressure will get bigger and bigger. But
you know where the story of the game already, don't you?
But at that point in the game, that's when Giacarini comes into play, because he starts picking up the gaps in front of our box, and then when the ball breaks to him, he's got the chance to carry it, and he's very good at carrying it, and then it's the delivery of the pass to the runner, which we saw a few goals scored like that at the back end of last season, notably Wickhamit at Manchester City.
It's interesting with Advocat's sort of done his research on Giacarini then, because you're kind of seeing a lot of him in training, so it's all well and good, like Gareth saying this stuff now, what he did last season stuff, but Advocat's got a lot to think about at the minute.
Doesn't know his name, does he, Cans?
The Italian lad,
yeah.
I think, as you say, Gareth, I think against the big boys, Giacarini's very good because he gets space to operate in. I think it's against the lesser lights where it's physical, that's where he struggles, and that's where you've got to question whether he was a signing that was right for a Premier League team. And there's been a few of those over recent seasons. Alvarez, likewise, was he going to be a success in the Premier League with the way he plays?
I forgot all about it.
That's something they've got to be a lot more careful with going forward. They've got to try and, you've got to go back to that pace and power in the Premier League. That's what's successful. And Sunderland haven't signed enough of them over the last few years.
Is there any truth in this clause in Alvarez's contract that gets triggered if we steal? Because that was a lot of money getting talked about, wasn't it?
Well, I think the clause is there, but it will be dependent on appearances, and ultimately even I don't know how many appearances it's dependent on. But even if he meets the appearance clause, I imagine there'll be a medical to be had, and so that's another possible stumbling block.
Mm. His knee injury is a complicated one, so yeah, James is right.
Well, he's barely, I mean, how many, has he started 4 games or something this season?
Something like that.
He's never been fully fit. I mean, after the Tottenham game when he made his debut, he was out because he was tired for 2 weeks or something. So it was nice when he had those flourishes against certain teams. I think he came against Swansea and looked nice, and he had a good game against Fulham. He had a decent first half against Swansea at their place. But that's about it, really. Holloway as well, when he came on, and
you can see he's got ability, but it's not always translates into being a success.
Well, if he was that good, he wouldn't be at Sunderland. I mean, that's the bottom line. Right. I mean, I think that's the frustrating fact is that many teams in Sunderland's position have to overpay for average players on the players that are promising, players that should be better than they are, and take gambles and hope.
Is that like your catchphrase? I should do a T-shirt.
What's that?
The one on that court, at the end of the day, if he was any good, he wouldn't be playing for Sunderland.
but it's true though, isn't it?
No,
you know, a number of times you look at players and you say, well, you know, if such and such a player had pace, you know, what a player he'd be, and you say, yeah, but then, you know, he'd probably be at a top four team.
I mean, Sessegnon, I think, is a Sunderland player as
he could score goals. Yeah,
he's just at the peak of Sunderland. That's where he is. It's like, he could go on, and he's gone to West Brom and hasn't really set the world alight there, and managed to
get a taxi home.
Get a taxi home or something. Yeah, well, if you can afford it, then
I think the issue is he put on the club account, didn't he? Is that not the issue?
I wonder if
the money's got to be relevant. Yeah,
I wonder if the driver knew he was and took him the long way.
The longer way to West Brom.
I'm only surprised that Niall Quinn didn't pay for it.
I'm
surprised there hasn't been a Twitter clamour for him to come back now, actually. You didn't look impressed with that one, Chris.
No. I think Sessegnon was a class player when in that season under Martin. I think he was one of those who lit up a game. I think just elaborating on Gareth's point, I think they've got to be smarter in the recruitment and development of players to get people who are going to be a success rather than taking a chance. I mean, Jaccarini's 7 million quid. And although he's clearly a very talented lad, he works his socks off. How much payback of Sunderland really had on that 7 million quid?
I think, is there an argument to suggest as well about Sunderland have to, teams like Sunderland as well, I'm not denigrating them on their own, but have to know their place in the football pyramid, and maybe if we want, we have to be almost a selling club, and then have to make sure that we can replace the players.
I'm not sure it's about that. I mean, look at Southampton. Look how well they develop players and the type of players they brought in to replace everyone who seemed to leave the club this summer. I mean, Mane, good example, just lightning quick. And you've got to try and look for players like that on the continent who maybe not big names, maybe not internationals, but who will fit into the Premier League.
And I think, you know, we've seen it in the past. I remember when Niall Quinn was here in 2006, he was very adamant that the club needed to properly check out players' backgrounds before they signed them. That was the big mantra. And yet, you know, players like Rauda Preacher and Chimbonda arrived and departed, you know, in pretty quick order. So it clearly wasn't done, or wasn't done properly.
And then we tried to do the whole let's go to Europe and get a load of bargains thing under Defante, and ended up with Carlson, Diakite,
bargains for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And Roberge, people like that who, you know, are all told, like, you know, you can go on YouTube and you can go on Wikipedia and you can talk about
how
they've
work for
the
people, though. That's the annoying thing, isn't it? Players you've never heard of from random leagues and stuff.
Maybe we just don't notice them. Maybe they come in and don't kick a ball either. And that's what happens. You hear about the ones that do well, like people like Barr, who come in over the years. I'm trying to think of other ones off the top of my head. Portsmouth used to be quite good at... They had a few decent players over the years where they just brought them in randomly. And West Ham, obviously, they brought in Sacco and people like that. So, but it's, I don't know. It seems
we're always in motion.
So there's no opportunity to build that situation where you can bring somebody in. Let's be honest, supporters like big names for big money. Mm. If you don't spend enough money, then you're doing it on the cheap. If you sign somebody who nobody's heard of, then he must be rubbish because they haven't heard of him. So you buy someone like Rodwell, who I think myself and Stephen were very much in favour of signing Rodwell, and it just hasn't worked. And then he's a waste of money. Where are these players who cost this much money from the French second division? Exactly. The joke in the light earlier in the season when people were talking about Joao, sort of signed the Joao. It's like, we don't need a director of football, we need a director of hindsight, because it's very easy to bring in all these players after they've done well.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to point to like you say, Jack Rodwell, who come in for big money and not perform the way that people wanted, and say he's a waste of money. And it's also very easy to point at the one player or a player that's come in for not very much money somewhere else and say, why didn't we get two of him instead? Well, nobody knew that was how it was going to work out at the time. I mean, everybody was happy at the time with the Rodwell signing. It hasn't worked out. It may yet work out next season, but we just don't know, do we?
Look at Newcastle. They spent £30 million in the summer. I know people will have you believe that they didn't spend anything, but they spent £30 million in the summer on the next Ginola, the next Bergkamp, and all this. And now they're the worst team in Premier League history, and all this. Just shows, you know, it's not easy. Even if you've got a super scout like Graham Carr, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm. And loads of coaching stuff.
That was a dig,
contracts,
by the way. That was a dig. So I don't think any Newcastle fans would be listening to this, so don't care.
We kind of deviated away from the point a little bit.
We've got about 15 minutes to fill, so probably good.
Well, I mean, getting back to the Arsenal game, I think James made an interesting point. He could move the forwards around to accommodate Johnson. Does anybody have any sort of preferred lineups or preferred ways of playing, or do you think it's pretty much just keep it as it is? Because
he's not got many options, has he?
No, well, that's a thing, isn't it?
And will Rodwell be fit, or is he done for the season, do you reckon?
I wouldn't count on him being fit.
No. Every time we seem to need him, he seems to be injured.
Yeah, well, that's a recurring problem that the club's medical staff have to have a look at, and he has to look at himself. I think James is right. I think maybe Johnson for Defoe wouldn't surprise me, because, I mean, there's a couple of times against Everton where Defoe got caught out trying to track back against Seamus Coleman. I mean, that penalty shout when you watch the replay at the time in live in real time, it didn't really look a penalty. Then you watch the replay and you thought maybe they got away with one. So I suppose Johnson's got a bit more familiarity in those situations than Defoe. But you look at the rest of the bench against Leicester, and there's not really a lot else he can do.
And Dick Avocat was full of praise for Adam Johnson after the game. So it makes you wonder whether that might be at the forefront of his mind.
He basically said that he needs to play him every week. So I would like to say, I think he'll come in, but it's a case of for who. Mm. And I think going to
do you think it'll make a difference? We have two games in a short space of time that he could plan for each game separately, or do you think he's surely just going to want to get the job done now, isn't he? And say, because okay, you know, if you can get a point, really go for it in this game rather than.
You're not going to save anyone for Chelsea.
You're taking a big risk if you start going down that route, aren't you? And what we see is one of the qualities of Advocat is he seems to have a settled team, a structured team.
He's the ultimate pragmatist, isn't he? That's what you get the impression. Very much so. And that's what the job he's being brought in to do. That he's being brought in to be the ultimate pragmatist.
It's noticeable if you look at the figures. He's got about twice as many points per game than Gus did out of the same players. I think he's got just about 1.5 points per game out of the players. If they'd have taken that over the course of the whole season, you know, you're safe with plenty to spare.
Europe, passports out.
That West Ham game is increasingly more annoying, isn't it? That last minute equaliser would have just we would have had our feet up. If it wasn't for that, but
you don't know if he would though. Because
I mean, this is always the thing though that you never know how they'd approach the next game.
The Southampton game, you kind of felt like, well, that was when the penny sort of seemed to drop, wasn't it? We need a win here.
Yeah, I mean, you look back, you wonder if they'd only drawn at St James's just before Christmas, then would they have gone and beaten Hull on Boxing Day? Mm. Isn't it?
Again, and we've talked about
and the goals at Everton. Chuck them into the equation.
Yeah. These must-win games that we've had, that you think if we'd got a point in those must-win games that we lost, then it would have been all right. But you can't do anything about it now. The last two games, and that's it. And I fancy them to be able to get a point. I think they're in a good position to know that. I know people will say, you know, it's a difficult thing because you should be going out to win, not get a point. But the fact that they know they've got two games to get one point, I think that's a good situation.
When you're playing against a side who's considerably better than you and they're going to have more possession, you kind of, most teams don't, I'm going to say go for a point, but most teams will go, you know, with the same template, won't they? They're going to go and keep it tight and defend first and let's try and catch them on the counter. I don't think that's going to stop just because they need to get a point. They're not going to suddenly say, let's not counter as much. Let's just defend. That's just not going to happen. Yeah. So in that respect, it's going to be the same as they would have portrayed game every season.
A goal is almost an away goal for Sunderland, like, because a draw is a win in the next two games.
That's what we're looking at.
A draw is a win, isn't it? Because like we're saying pragmatically.
If a draw was a win, Sunderland would have another 30 points.
Yeah,
by now.
Yeah. But in the last two games, a draw for Sunderland is as good as a win. They've achieved what they need to achieve. So they know a goal is almost like an away goal. They know that to be beaten on the day, the Arsenal have to score twice. Yeah. So they're in that situation psychologically. I think if they approach it in that manner, where they know they've got an advantage by needing a point, because as long as they don't lose that game, they're in business. So I think like mentally, aside from that bizarre 8 minutes or whatever it was against Crystal Palace, they've been pretty good.
That's been the most encouraging thing for me, as I said.
Yeah, mentally they're in a good place. Mm. You can see the determination, commitment of the players, and you have done over the last four games. They clearly want to remain in the Premier League. They're clearly giving their all to remain in the Premier League. And I think when you look up the road at Newcastle, you can't say the same thing about those players up there.
I mean, they've got to get a win. And as long as we obviously don't get battered in the next two games.
Well, that's a worry. Is that a worry for people? The goal, because everybody's seeing the goal difference. It's only five. It doesn't seem that much of a big swing when you're away to Arsenal and you're away to Chelsea, does it? That's quite easily reduced that.
Well, when you think that, you know, if Hull have to win on the last day, so So imagine that they're out of the picture because they've got the best goal difference anyway. Yeah. And so it comes down to Sunderland and Newcastle. Well, Sunderland would have to lose both games. So that's a minimum of two of your five goals chalked off because you'd have to lose each by at least one goal. And Newcastle would have to win on the last day as well, which would also give them one. So that would be three of your five goals as a bare minimum. So it doesn't leave you much wiggle room then. You've only got two goals to play with. So when you start looking at that, then it's a problem. But unless Hull and Newcastle both win on the last day, then all this is academic. I mean, Newcastle can draw possibly, but really,
Sunderland would have to have been beaten 5-1 across the games.
But like Jim's saying, that Newcastle are going to win, so that's going to claw some of that back anyway.
Yeah.
If we lose both games,
if they win and we lose both games, it goes both anyway because it's a point. That doesn't matter.
Okay.
The goal difference will be irrelevant.
So if Newcastle draw, Sunderland have got to lose 2 games by 5. Yeah.
Not get beaten 5-0. What happens if it? Is it goals scored? Or
Goals scored, so that's Newcastle in Newcastle's favour.
It should be head-to-head, shouldn't it?
But what's quite interesting...
Newcastle scored more goals than Sunderland.
Only Burnley have scored fewer than
I'm just surprised anyone can possibly have conceded more than us.
Oh, yeah.
We go and lose 8-0 and 4-0 at home.
The ridiculous thing, you know, was that if you take out the Southampton game and the Palace game and the Villa game, Sunderland actually have one of the best defensive records in the Premier League. It's those three games which have cost Sunderland, you know, an unbelievable.
And that's just proof, isn't it? When we go back to those games, take them in isolation, what were you talking about at Southampton? Once you go three down, there's a rule in football that you just shut up shop and you know, regroup and damage limitation, and they could pay the ultimate price for that.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if the goal difference will come into it, to be honest.
I don't know. I was thinking Newcastle, you could expect them to draw more West Ham, couldn't you? You wouldn't be surprised at that.
So they were lucky to get out of
West Brom game. I'm not sure I can see them winning, but I could see them drawn, certainly.
The thing that comes into it, of course, is there are some things that you just can't budget for, like Leroy Fer's goal at the weekend against Newcastle. You know, anybody can hit a worldie like that, and there's nothing you can do about it. And if Newcastle are drawing and Hull are drawing and everybody's right with the world up here in the North East, and then all of a sudden Tom Huddleston hits a thunderbolt from 30 yards, with 5 minutes to go, then, you know, where does that leave Newcastle? You've got 5 minutes and suddenly you're the ones, you know, in the bottom three.
He pulls his shirt up and there's a picture of Livermore on it, on his T-shirt.
#justice for Livermore. I don't think we'll be seeing that hashtag going around.
I don't know. Right, how are people feeling about the game? Then we'll just try and wrap things up now and get some predictions. Does anybody think that we'll get over the line this Wednesday? I think I'm taking the silence as being very telling.
I'm going to say yes, because if I don't, then it won't be very good for me mentally. so I'm going to be deluded and say that it will. I'm away on Saturday night, so I want to enjoy it. I don't want to be stressing about the match on Sunday. So for my own well-being, I'm going to say that Sunderland will get a battling point.
Lucky 0-0.
It might even be a 1-1.
I think Gareth might have a squelchy bum Saturday night, personally.
Yeah, well, I might anyway, regardless of result.
Depends where you're going, I guess,
Look, Arsenal are runaway favourites, and you'd have to look at it and say, well, they should win. But I just have a feeling that, yes, Sunderland can get a point out of that game. What helps is the fact that a point's good for Arsenal, too. With 20 minutes to go, both teams might think there's no point in taking any silly risks.
That's what
a point suits us both.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping we get through the game an hour at 0-0, and then Arsenal think, you know what, do we need to run ourselves into the ground here?
Exactly.
And then we go and nick a last minute winner on the break.
That wouldn't be very sporting. Sporting.
I know.
Chris
is avoiding making a prediction here.
I think our set pieces have been quite good recently, and I fancy us maybe to I think. We'll create in a game like that. You'll probably create maybe two chances and a half chance or a chance and a half chance. Now, can we take one of those two or three chances that we'll get?
Let's try to do the maths there. Half chances and chances.
Yeah, so you know, you just got to make sure you take one of those. Like I'm saying, it a goal would be like an away goal in the situation that we're in. I think that's what they've got. That's how they've got to think of it.
Danny Graham, the hero, I think. Yeah, Danny Graham, the hero. It would be nice. Score the winner at the Emirates.
And that'll be it. The winner. He hasn't gone for a draw. He's gone for the winner.
What a prediction from Chris before.
It wasn't a prediction, by the way. It was just a dream scenario.
I think Arsenal win 1-2-0.
Okay, there you go.
midway through the second half to end Sunderland's resistance, just as we were having a little hope that they'd hang on for a point.
That familiar story.
Yep. Just to spark a late rewrite.
Yeah. Midway through the second half, that's when everything's going to ease off and they're going to all settle for a point, remember?
Yeah, we can live in hope, can't we? Okay, well, we'll be back Thursday with the end of the light. Hopefully it's done and dusted by then and we can
Hopefully we'll be back in the proper studio.
And smile and get through that show. Okay. Not building our hopes up too much, y'all.
It'll be the last one on Last Into the Light on Thursday, I think it is.
Possibly, yeah.
So savour these. We've got one more Wise Men saying one more Into the Light, so savour it. Because it'll be 3 or 4 months with that one from then on. Well, I might do another summer if anything happens with managers coming in and all that.
Lots of them if we go down. More games to cover in the Championship.
Starting earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for listening. Over and out.